This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, together with Philip Xi. In the meantime, shifting our attention to China, because China's National Institution for Finance and Development, a government-linked think tank, put the nation's overall debt at 270% of GDP at the end of 2020, up from 246% from the same period in 2019. In fact, China's debt has grown dramatically over the past decade and is one of the biggest economic challenges confronting the ruling Chinese Communist Party.
I mean, Beijing has identified it as a potential threat to its economic stability. Now, while other countries around the world like the US and Japan also suffer high debt to GDP levels, what makes China unique is that the corporate sector in China accounts for a large proportion of total debt at more than 160%. And so with the recent bond market shocks over Huarong and China Evergrande, will the Chinese government have to intervene and bail out these businesses that are too big to fail?
So to shed some light on China's challenging private debt situation, we have on the line with us Gary Ng, an economist at Natixis, a French corporate and investment bank. Good morning, Gary. Thanks for joining us again. Now, how successful has China been in addressing its bad corporate debt in the past few years? And has the pandemic stalled efforts?
Good morning, everyone. So yes, corporate debt has always been a worry for investors, basically for China, right? But and it has also never been as important as right now because of also the pandemic. So I think the predominant question is really how fast this credit has expanded and also the relative performance versus the GDP growth. So if we look at the most updated figure, basically what we have in 2021 is that we do see a decline in credit growth. If we look at total social financing, it has decelerated from 13.3% last year, and this year in July 2021, we only see 10.3%. So we also see that growth has started to pick up a little bit, while leverage has probably declined on a relative basis. However, if we look broadly into the asset quality, we do see that this better growth and potentially lower leverage doesn't necessarily mean that this credit risk will be smaller, as we have seen, of course, in the example in Huarong and Evergrande, and even in the banking sector. If we see the overall non-performing loan ratio has actually stabilized, but the NPL ratio for the property sector has increased from 1.2% 2 years ago to right now 2%. So definitely some progress has been made in the deleveraging, in containing the leverage, but not so much on the credit risk side.
So Gary, I mean, you say some stabilization happening. So is Huarong and Evergrande the end of the saga, or is this really just the tip of an iceberg then?
One of the trends that we see is really that for the firms that are getting into trouble, the size is actually basically getting bigger. So Huarong and Evergrande, they are basically two clear examples that they have high leverage and they are also operate in two important sectors in China, which are financial services and real estate. But I totally agree on the phrase that you used to describe that it may be the tip of the iceberg, especially on the property sector. Especially if we look into the business model of the property developers in China versus the others, they have really expanded leverage through a lot of different ways in the past. For example, they have a very heavy reliance on pre-sales, and basically that is to fund a quick turnover for profit and debt repayment. And if we look broader into the market view, we do see that right now the market view, one-fifth of Chinese property developers as negative, which means that basically investors are increasingly not as confident in some of the repayment ability for a lot of these firms. And also, if we remember, there is a policy called the three red lines that has been introduced around 2 years ago, which aim at containing the leverage of the Chinese property developers. On the one hand, of course, it is probably a good policy because these players are all highly leveraged. But the negative consequence is also that if this come too sharply and quickly, a lot of these firms may not find the liquidity that they need in order to repay the debt. So so basically, I do think that it's hard to imagine that Huarong and Evergrande, both of them are only isolated case. And especially in the property sector, there may be actually more defaults coming up.
And what do you think the Chinese government's position is with regards to this bad debt? I mean, Huarong and Evergrande are larger than life, but would they allow these debts to default or and intervene?
I think especially for this case of the Evergrande, there may be a few cases that we can think of. For example, the worst case may be a complete bankruptcy, and the best scenario is that someone come in as a white knight and then decide to purchase the whole group overnight. So I do think the two scenarios remain quite unlikely, especially I think for the Chinese government. It doesn't seem to be an exact guarantee that they may save all of these firms. On the banking sector, it may be a different story because it may pose a systematic risk. And we have seen in the past that there are capital injections by central or local government into some smaller banks. And even we can expect some consolidation with other banks, which we have also seen before. But for the other sector, the problem is that even though some firms may be considered as strategically important for the market or especially for the Chinese government, these firms may not be safe directly. One of the examples that we can see before is Tsinghua Group, which basically specializes in semiconductors, have a blurry line on, not sure whether it's a SOE or POE, and expanded massively overseas with leverage before. And in the case of Evergrande, which is probably the biggest worry that we have nowadays, it is clearly less important, especially if you are only operating in the property sector, and which means there are at least 20 to 30 firms, which probably equivalent large size, which can replace it. So I do think that the Chinese government will try to prevent a spillover effect, but it's hard to expect a complete relief package or even a government bailout for the firm itself. So the most likely scenario is that they may be forced to sell some of the assets to other players, but it's hard to expect the government will save the whole company.
Okay, and at the same time, Gary, you know, the Chinese government was pushing to internationalize its capital markets. Does events like this at Evergrande and Huarong actually derail their attempts, especially with foreign investors? Because, I mean, foreign investors alone are owed $7.4 billion in bond payments from Evergrande next year.
I think it does give basically spark more worry for a lot of foreign investors. And I think from this general rising credit risk and what we can say is a credit risk polarization perspective, foreign investors will need to be more selective in terms of choosing what they want to invest. So we do see in the bond market, there are a few trends. First, I think the predominant question is that a lot of foreign investors has been investing in the offshore sector on the property sector. The main reason is simply because that, oh yes, it may be kind of risky, but the property sector seems to be growing quick in China and it offers very high yield. If you look at Evergrande, it reached a point before all the drama has happened, you can still get more than 10% per year. So I think it means that foreign investors may be more selective in a lot of high yield names, which will basically mean that not only are basically bad for Evergrande, but for some of the other similar peers that are trying to raise funds in the offshore market. However, I do think that because of the size of the Chinese market, it's also hard for foreign investors to actually complete forego this market. So they will be probably more likely to switch to the safer names such as SOEs or investment grade names in order to basically continue the investment. However, I think the general sentiment is that it will be more cautious.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Gary Ng from Natistics giving us his view on the private debt situation in China. And the last point is true. I think foreign investors might be a little bit more cautious in terms of what they used to buy or what they plan to buy. So the property sector was hot, hot, hot. It was, booming at one time. But I think now there are considerations as to whether they really need to think about this. And at the same time, we've also had policy reform, right, towards this common prosperity. So China is going to be an interesting space, but because it's such a large economy, you can't ignore it nonetheless. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.